Hi, I'm Liz Taylor, and I'm the MD of the Liz Taylor Consultancy. And thank you for listening to my podcast, The Events That Made Me. You are going to hear from another of my favourite people today, dancer, choreographer, celebrity judge, the multi-talented, fabulous Arlene Phillips. I've been so excited to host today's guest on my podcast, Events That Made Me, because she's enjoyed a journey of events that include choreography, theatre director, talent scout, television judge, presenter, and dancer. Talent that has taken her from my hometown of Manchester to the height of success. So let's hope we have enough time, because Arlene Phillips, we want to hear all. Welcome.
Thank you. And yes, Liz, you will hear all.
So at the age of three, let's start at the beginning. At the age of three, you started dance classes. And so it was obviously in your blood. You're now a household name. And I know that one of the events that made you was at the age of 22, you took yourself off to London for a week and never came back. What happened?
Well, I'd always loved to dance, and I came from a family that really couldn't afford to send me to dance lessons, but I absolutely was determined somehow I was going to dance. And I managed, with the help of uncles and working in a bakery shop on an all-day Sunday and paper round, I managed to get myself to dancing. And at the age of 15, when I had high hopes of going to London and joining into one of the famous ballet schools there, my mother passed away, and I had an older brother, 17, a younger sister who was just about to turn 13, and I knew that I just couldn't leave my father and the family, so I remained in London and got a scholarship to study dance at a school on Deansgate. I studied for 4 years, and then I started teaching there. And when I was 22, the ballet teacher of this very large, quite grand school on Deansgate said to me, "I'd like you to go to London for a week. I've heard that there is a place open called the Dance Center. They've all come from America. They've got wonderful teachers, American teachers. Go for a week in the summer holidays, get inspired, and bring back all the wonderful dance that you've learned to the students." I did my week. I did every class, and I was supposed to leave on Saturday morning after arriving, starting on Monday. And on Friday night, I went into a class. I just saw Molly Malloy, Modern American Jazz. And I thought, that's something I haven't done before. I wonder if it was like West Side Story, because I've seen West Side Story. And from the moment the teacher started the class, I fell in love with the style, with her teaching, with everything she did. And I realized, having been trained in ballet and done some of what they called modern, this was something that I had been, although I didn't know it, searching for all my life. After the class, everybody that sort of did the class and the teacher sat around in a little canteen in the dance center on Floral Street, chatting. I told her how much I loved the class and I wish I could do her classes. And she said to me, "I've never had a student who has come in and understood my work and executed it so beautifully. I'd like to give you a scholarship. I do 3 classes a day. You're invited to all the classes." And my heart started to beat, and I said, "Well, I have to go back to Manchester. I've got a job there and a family there. I have no money to continue to stay here. I've got nowhere to live." She said, "Well, I could put 2 of those things together for you." And I looked at her and she said, "Yes, I've got a great friend called Ridley Scott, and he wants someone to live in, help take care of his little child while he's working, and help tidy the house, keep the house clean. And so if you went work there and I gave you a scholarship, is it something you could consider?" That evening, sitting in the YMCA in my bedroom, there where I was staying, just off Tottenham Court Road. I went, this is an opportunity of a lifetime. But if I go home, I will never be able to leave. I will not have the courage. I know I'll go back to the family. My sister was now 19. She was fine. My brother actually wasn't living at home. It was my sister and my dad. And I took the courage to call my family and saying I wasn't coming home. And I called my ballet teacher first thing on the Saturday morning and said, you have to understand this. I will pay back every penny I owe you. You just have to give me a chance. And I didn't go home. That was it. I stayed, I took the jobs, I studied, and I was in London.
Well, I must tell you, Arlene, I'm on series three of these podcasts, and it's the first time that I have goose pimpled all the way up my neck. I think that is just an amazing story. Just amazing. My only comment would be is that you must have been really, really special for that to have been. No, seriously, you must have been really special. I think that, you know, people perceive you as a TV presenter and as a judge, but they forget actually that fundamentally you dance. That's what you do. Okay, so you do this, you leave, I think it was the Muriel Tweedy School, wasn't it? And you're now down in London, you know, you're living with Ridley Scott. I mean, they should really make a movie here. 8 years on, you end up gracing the TV screens with a rather risque ensemble. Tell us about it.
Well, I studied, and the one thing I knew how to do was teach, because I'd been a teacher in Manchester. And so eventually, to earn money, I started to teach in a lot of well-known schools, Italia Conti, Arts Educational Schools, the then Bush Davis School. There were a lot of schools, and I started teaching, and I also started my own rock jazz classes in the dance centre. So I was earning some money, I had an income, and started to go out. And the world outside of this world of dance was incredible. There was disco coming to life. There were clubs. There were fashions, the King's Road. And I realized that when I looked at television and watched television and turned my TV on to watch dance, it was lovely, but it was gorgeous girls doing lots of smiling. And it didn't seem to embody the world outside, this world that was moving so fast in fashion and style, and it didn't embody what I was teaching, because my jazz was with attitude. It was from the heart and soul. It was brave. It was outrageous. It was different. I was embracing and bringing together the world of technique and the dance stars I knew, but with something far more outrageous. And I decided to take the best students in my class who were coming to study with me every day and form a group. I was going to form a dance group to do what I wanted to do. And I picked the best boys. It was multiracial. It was about being the best in my class. That was the only significance. And so I had this kind of mixed group of dancers, and all I could think about is I want to break through. So I called them hot gossip because I wanted everyone to talk about them. And we became, on the sort of style scene in London, the greatest thing. Once a week, we performed in a club called Monkbury's in Jermyn Street. And it's a tiny little place, but everybody, all the fashionistas came to see us. And it was sexy because we didn't have a lot of money and lingerie was cheap to buy, and I could dye it lots of different colors. So you thought they were in different costumes. One of the boys in the group, to earn money, worked in a sex shop, and he was given all of these amazing costumes we were allowed, you know, to wear. And it built up and it was a real cult thing. But we couldn't break through. Everyone said that I talked to producers, directors, brought to see them, too sexy for television. No. No one was interested. And at the point when I was just about to give up, I said to all of my group, look, you're all working so hard, but we don't earn very much money. Be free to go and do what you want to do. A magazine in London called Ritz at the time was, again, it's what's going on in London, saw a photograph of us that had been taken at the club, and it was on their cover. At the same time, David Mallett, a director-producer, had been asked by ITV to find a dance group for a new TV show called the Kenny Everett Video Show. Kenny Everett was an outrageous comedian, and now he was going to have his own TV show. He saw the cover of Ritz and said, get me Arlene Phillips, get me Hot Gossip, they're going to be on the TV show. He'd never seen us dance. That's what he wanted. And we did our first television show. Mary Whitehouse, the so-called self-claimed protector of public morals at the time, saw the TV show, was outraged. We were on the front page of every single newspaper. And from that moment, I never looked back. My career was made. It was, you know, called Hot Gossip. It really was the hottest thing happening in London because no one had ever seen anything like it. And the television company was really proud of us, but the public and a lot of people were outraged that this show, this sexy show, could be put on so early when young people could see it.
What I love about your story and the little that you've told me so far is the versatility. You obviously, you have a huge talent and you have been aware of opportunities, seized the opportunity and actually made it work for you. And that, I think, represents a business brain as well. And so I'm listening to you and I'm thinking to myself, you've really made it work. And as you've gone along on your journey, you've got a huge number of accolades attributed to you as a dancer and teacher, choreographer. And then at 37, you get a contract to choreograph a musical and fill in the blanks here, Arlene, because this is hilarious.
Well, I was obviously a very successful choreographer and Hot Gossip were flying. They'd had a massive hit record with Sarah Brightman, I Lost My Heart to a Starship Trooper. I was asked to choreograph all kinds of things. And my agent got a call saying that Olivia Newton-John and Alan Carr, the film producer of Grease, the musical, had seen Hot Gossip and they'd been gossiping about them and were coming to London and wanted to see Hot Gossip perform. Well, we happened to have a gig at the time that they were there. They saw Hot Gossip. And Alan Carr told me he was about to make a film called Can't Stop the Music with the Village People. And he wanted me to choreograph the film and bring Hot Gossip into the film. So here I was with my Hollywood contract. And I was thrilled. I couldn't believe it. I was going to make a movie in Hollywood. A Manchester girl who grew up wanting to dance. Those dreams don't happen.
They do happen. They do. And you are proof of that. So were you going to go to LA to do this?
So I was going to go to Los Angeles when I discovered I was pregnant. I had the contract. The contract was signed and I was heading to LA. But the baby was going to be born in September. I wanted the baby. I wanted the baby. I wanted the film. And we had a week off in the film. There was a hiatus when the whole unit moved from New York to LA. They'd been a month in working in New York and moved back to LA with that week off. And I was so afraid to even wanting to do both. And a very good friend of mine, an American, said, you know, in America, if you've signed a contract, they can't refuse you your ability to do that contract. It's signed. And the fact you're having a baby doesn't matter. Well, I spoke to Alan Carr, I called him up on the phone, and he said, to my surprise, sure, whatever you need, yes, you've got the week off, we'll get your Winnebago so you and the baby can be in the Winnebago on the side of the lot. I'll get you someone to help take care of the baby. I'll get you a guru who will be with you, who will keep you calm throughout the film. He can start working with you in New York, be there when you fly back to Los Angeles, be with you. He'll teach you breathing exercises. It couldn't have been a more charmed way to experience both working on a massive film and actually having a baby. I did go back to work a week after having her, my beautiful daughter, Alana, but she was there. She was on the lot. I would bring her into the soundstage. She was with me all the time.
So has she got dual nationality then?
She was
born in America.
She was born in America, which became very complicated recently, but we won't even go into that. Yes, she was born in America.
So you're pregnant and you're choreographing. I mean, this is sort of stuff that dreams are made of, and probably a little bit difficult for the listener to understand because it's all a little bit too good to be true, but it's the work ethic and it's the commitment and the belief in yourself, which I think has been a huge part of your success. And I assume the support of a very loving family. Who are they still based up here in Manchester?
No, well, some of my family are here, some are in Cheshire, some are in Manchester. We're all split up, but still very, very close.
So we've got one daughter at 37, I'm correct in saying, and then, am I right in thinking that you were pregnant 10 years later?
Yes.
A menopausal mum?
Yes. I thought it was the menopause. I had no idea I was pregnant. I really didn't think you could get pregnant at 47.
Were you in a relationship then?
I mean, yes, I was. By this time, I was with my partner. We'd been together for 4 years.
Did you plan on having a family?
No, not at all. I thought I'm past it. I never, ever thought of having a second child. You know, I had my beautiful daughter, Alana, and she was enough for me. And by the time I realized, you know, I started getting sick, I realized this isn't the menopause.
Where were you in your career, Arlene, at this time?
Oh, I was about to choreograph a musical called Matador. A flamenco musical. It was nonstop. I was musical after musical after musical. I was putting Starlight Express on all over the world, in Tokyo, actually, and it was coming back from Tokyo that I threw up on the plane. And again, I didn't even think it had anything to do with being pregnant. I thought it was travel sickness. So no clue that I was pregnant until I was almost 4 months. And I realized, you know, my body was changing. I was tired, and I never get tired. And then my beautiful, wonderful late baby, Abby, was born. And she's just my sweetheart.
What I'd like and what I say to my girls is that there's no rush anymore. You know, if you're a little bit older, you're not too old to do anything.
No.
You can embrace the things that you miss when you're younger because you feel that you should be focused on motherhood. Life is so different. And I was 29 and 30, but I do wish that perhaps I'd waited a little longer maybe, because I like the fact you're only as young as you feel. Or they say you're only as young as the man that you feel. And I don't know how old. I'm absent at the moment. But I just think what I'm trying to say is the fact that you are an older mum gives you a lot of benefits that you wouldn't have as a young mum. Arlene and I have one thing in common. We've both been around for quite a long time. She became a mum much later in life, which proved that actually it's never too late to do anything. So my air extension this week is being of a certain age. Not wishing to name drop here, because I think we are name dropping a little bit, but I know that Andrew Lloyd Webber has been huge in, well, a very important part of your life. Tell us why.
I first met Andrew when he became a fan of Hot Gossip in the early days. He would come and see them in all the quirky places that we played. And one of them was a place called Country Cousins on the King's Road, which is where he first saw Sarah Brightman, who was in Hot Gossip. And we became quite good friends, not in a creative way at all, but he always had ideas that one day he wanted to do something adventurous or something using me and Hot Gossip. It didn't happen, and life went on until I went to do Can't Stop the Music with the Village People. And in 1982, I had told Andrew early that year about when I was making Can't Stop the Music and Alan Carr wanted me to roller skate. And I said, I don't roller skate. So I want some roller skating and Can't Stop the Music. So he got me the best teacher. Of course, everything was the best with Alan Carr, the best teacher to teach me to roller skate. And one day Alan came in just to watch what we were doing on skates. And I was 7 months pregnant at the time. And he went, oh my goodness, I forgot you were pregnant. Get those skates off. I haven't even got insurance. Down those skates, get them off, screaming and shouting. And I was casually telling Andrew the story of the skates and me being pregnant. 2 years later, he gets in touch and says, you know, you told me about you were learned to roller skate in Los Angeles when you were making a film. I said, yes. He said, well, do you still roller skate? I said, well, I can. Yes, why? And he said, I want you to choreograph a new musical I am doing called Starlight Express, and it's all on roller skates, and I want you to be the choreographer.
Shut up. Did you do that?
And I did Starlight Express. It was my first musical, and it opened the door to me doing Grease and We Will Rock You and just so many, many musicals from that moment on, from creating the choreography on Starlight Express on skates.
Dance is very varied. So, you know, you've got ballet, you've got all the things that we've talked about. What do you actually enjoy doing the most?
What I enjoy doing the most is something I really studied when I first came to London and then sort of slightly abandoned and came back to, about 20 years ago, full on, is contemporary dance. Because you love Matthew Bourne, I think contemporary dance really involves the performer as an actor. Everything comes from the inside. It's about this unique way of telling and expressing a story through your body.
My appreciation of Matthew Bourne is very much, and I think it's because I am in the event business and I'm producing from that aspect, is the whole, the theatre of it, the interpretation, how he takes it, brings it into the modern day, the costumes, and your interpretation of it is the ballet, is the communication through dance. Mine is a combination. Yours is very specific. Do you dance?
I dance, yeah.
You still dance?
I still dance. I still choreograph. I've done events. I've done Commonwealth Games. I've done big productions, small productions, where you're creating from the ground up, where you're creating, you know, from an idea on a slip of paper. I worked on Michael Flatley's Lord of the Dance, the original director. There are so many things with dance. It isn't just dance. And certainly when you're directing, you get a script and you get the music and you build ideas, you know, from the smallest to, as I say, I think Commonwealth Games are probably the biggest thing I've ever helped create.
Just explain to the listener what you did for that.
In Manchester, well, we started, in fact, 2 years before the actual Commonwealth Games. And you start and you have to work out not just the creativity and how big the numbers can be and have to be, because it has to involve all kinds of huge, big performance pieces, as well as being able to narrow it down where your vast audience and millions around the world can focus on one small thing. And you start working, and then eventually you come up with creative ideas, you throw in suggestions. You always have to be aware of the audience in the auditorium and, again, the global audience. But there you are, being given this opportunity to look at the lighting, the projection, the creation, the costumes, the movement. Those are the things that fill me, up with desire.
I think that's a passion that a lot of sort of artistic, talented people have. We actually, my company, did the closing party for the Commonwealth Games, the Queen, and my client was Charles Allen, who you probably know.
I know Charles, yes.
So at the time, Charles was head of Granada.
Yeah.
And there was Jules Burns and David Liddiman, Steve Morrison. And
David Liddiman,
We did the closing party, so our paths have crossed, you see.
Yes.
I've obviously tiptoed past you.
Hi there, I'm Arlene Phillips, and you're listening to The Events That Made Me with Liz Taylor.
Now, one thing I've got to ask you, because I know he's meant to be a bit of a diva, but, you know, he's my era, and I love Elton John, and I love all the albums and all the songs, and you choreographed a wonderful, famous video for that hit, I'm Still Standing, which I think we all toe-tap to. Am I right in saying it's the only one that he actually danced in?
Yes, actually, I did choreograph Steps. Yes. I mean, Elton John, when you watch him, and I've seen him everywhere, Madison Square Gardens, he literally dances, but he doesn't realise he's dancing. He is a dancer inside of him, and his performances and, you know, playing up on the piano backwards with his hands. And yes, he's a dancer, but actually to choreograph him, it's not something he really enjoys.
Was it a success?
Well, eventually he did join in beautifully and wonderfully shyly. But I did say to him, oh, come on, Elton, you're the worst dancer I've ever had to work with. Yeah, and he's not forgotten it.
I bet he hasn't. Let's move on. I know that the listener will be dying to hear about Strictly. In fact, Harriet Harman, the then Minister for Women and Equality, supported you in a decision that was considered controversial. Tell us about the Strictly, the time on Strictly, because you were Miss Strictly, Mrs. Strictly.
Mrs. Strictly, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I loved that program. I loved it. I was one of the original judges. I did the pilot with Len Goodman. The two of us were together from the very, very start. And I loved my time on it. And then a decision was made without my knowledge that they were going to make a change. I had absolutely no idea. And I was going through quite a traumatic time because Michael Somerton, my beautiful agent who had looked after Hot Gossip and me and my career throughout, passed away from cancer fairly quickly. And the day after he had passed away and I was grieving, I'd been with him all the prior day, my telephone rang very early in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, and the voice said, "Ah, good morning, is that Arlene Phillips?" And I said, yes, thinking it would have something to do with Michael. And they said, "It's Five Live here. We want to ask you how you feel about being replaced on Strictly with Alicia Dixon." And I said, "I'm very sorry. I've got too much going on now. I'll get back to you," and put the phone down. Called every producer I knew on Strictly. I called everybody. And either they weren't there or too busy. And it was around, I think it was around 10:30 in the morning when I got to speak to one of the producers. But in the meantime, I got up, got dressed, opened my blinds, and the whole of the street outside my house was full of cameramen, recording vans, press. It was pandemonium. Some of the press were in my garden. And I thought, what is going on?
And you didn't have a clue?
Not a clue. Not even a hint.
You know, everyone's entitled to make change. It's very fickle.
I mean, you're a person for hire and to let go.
So how did you manage it? How did you handle it?
It was, you know, in many ways, I think I handled it badly because of the circumstances. I was grieving inside, but I had a bigger thing to grieve about than losing Strictly. I didn't have an agent to look after me. I think that, in a sense, I didn't make this. I felt I did not make the stand or demand clarity in the way that I should have done. I remained without answers. I just tried to survive. They offered me another contract. The agent that I then had said, you should take the contract, don't upset the BBC, stay with the BBC. I think my head was in the cloud. Now I look back, I wish that I had taken control over what happened for myself instead of just allowing it to rattle on. I always felt guilty that I should feel grief at losing a job when you lose someone you love. So I tried to go, it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter, it does matter, you know, but it does matter.
Because you go back with Bruno to sort of the early days of your career, don't you?
He did the makeup for Hot Gossip.
And I think at the time he didn't speak English. Am I right in saying that?
When I first met him, he didn't speak a word. And all the new people used to go to the back of my class and Bruno would keep coming forward and I'd say, and asking questions. The way I put new people at the back was so they could see the people at the front and follow the exercises. Not Bruno. He wanted his own lesson at the front from the teacher.
And are you still friendly now?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Did you stay in touch with Len? Are you in touch with everyone or did it fragment the relationships? I'm only being nosy here, aren't I?
No. Absolutely. No, Bruno and I have always remained close. Craig and I speak a lot, see a lot of him. Len, not so much, but we always, you know, we're in touch at Christmases and birthdays. But Len lives kind of much further away.
It's nice that Craig, you know what? In some respects, things have to change and we all do move on. And I think the fact that you've still got those friendships and you still got the respect from those people and those connections just says it all. Nothing else really needs to be said.
Yes.
Now, you're going to hate this next bit. So I'm going to go into this very slowly and let's see what your reaction is. I know that you were the organiser in 2017 of a fundraiser to support those affected by Grenfell Tower. And you called upon all your contacts. And I'll swap you black books, Arlene, because I think your swamp. But I did say I'd swap with Eamon Holmes, but I think that yours is probably hotter than his. And you called on people like Matthew Bourne, who is my... I play the piano. I play since I was four, and I love my music. I listen to all sorts of classic, all sorts of different music. And I adore Matthew Bourne. I love his Nutcracker, a Swanmaker, whatever. I love him. I just think he's so talented. And I listened to a podcast that he was on a while back and I was completely blown away, the man behind the ballet shoes. So I am going to organise, and this all came through Kath Tilsley, who introduced us.
Yeah.
Next year, when we can all get back into events, what I hope will be called Strictly Manchester. I've got Gok Kwon, who...
I love Gok.
So Gok was shoved into a corner, as you're about to be.
Yeah.
And he was on my podcast. I've got Gok Kwon. I've got Ruth Langsford, who we're going to get her in her ballet shoes. Robin Windsor, who actually gave me 6 lessons that I bid for, and I would love to be able to dance, but I can't. Kath Tilsley is going to be our very own Tess Daly. And we're going to actually do it in Manchester City Centre, in a warehouse, and we're going to give 10 charities a donation. So whatever we raise, if we raise, and I'm hoping to raise in excess of £500,000, it will be divided up between charities that are chosen by the people that support. And I would like you, and if you can persuade him, but you're more important than Bruno, to be our judge, our chief judge. And I want you to help me put this together. So now you've been pushed in that corner. Are you in or are you out?
I'm in. It's Manchester. It's my hometown. You know, my mother, I hope one of the charities, cancer charity, because my mother died from leukemia in Manchester. I was in the Royal Infirmary. And, you know, when they didn't know really what leukemia was. And
she was very young, wasn't she?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So... But anything, any fundraiser that's in Manchester, it's dance involved, I'm the one.
Fab, you are absolutely the one, Arlene Phillips. You most definitely are. And I just want to thank you very much. I mean, I did all my research on you and there was so much, you know, you've choreographed so much, you've danced, you've done everything. And I struggled a little bit to ask you specific questions that would cover everything that you've done. What I like the most about you is that you have that northern grit and you've got that northern warmth. So listen, Arlene, thank you. You're my chief judge on Strictly Manchester. You're a gorgeous, gorgeous lady. And I really, really appreciate you giving me your time today. And it's been wonderful meeting you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Liz. I've enjoyed it so much.
The thing that I got from my interview with Arlene was the chemistry, the drive, the ambition, the warmth, the sincerity. And that only comes with being of a certain age. To find out why, listen to my air extension, because the title is Being of a Certain Age. If you're enjoying Events That Made Me, subscribe wherever you're listening and tell your friends about it too. To find out more about how you and I can work together, look for @LizTaylorConsultancy on social media or go to my website, liz-taylor-consulting.co.uk. My next guest is undoubtedly one that you will not want to miss. This was a coup and it was a big deal for me. Tune in on the 24th of March to the Events That Made Me and listen to the story that Howard Donald shared with me, Liz Taylor.